Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears, off and running with you on Thursday, February the 4th, 2021. 12 coming up on 13 minutes past the hour, and we have got a great show for you this morning. Don't tune away for the next 2 hours. Going to do a little bit of housekeeping here and let you know. Coming up next hour on this show, for the entire hour from 9:15 until 10 a.m., we are going to be joined by the gentleman who has won more Emmy Awards than any other single male in the history of the Emmy Awards, which is now over 70 years old. You probably remember him best as Lou Grant on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, a good pal of ours. He's been here to Marion to visit with us, Ed Asner, next hour to talk about all things going on in the world and the passing of his dear friend Cloris Leachman, who passed away 1 week ago today. But we start the program with another good friend of ours. He's been to Marion many, many times. He's been with us on Mary Ellen Withrow's birthday. He's come to Marion, and we've had great conversations, and I assume we will have a great conversation here this morning because there is a lot going on in the political world which we have not had a chance to talk to in quite some time. Talk to him about, not only in the political world, but also here in Ohio. A lot of things going on. For the first hour this morning, we are joined by the 68th governor of the state of Ohio, Ted Strickland. Governor, how are you?
Well, Scott, I'm great, and it's wonderful to be with you this morning and with all of your listeners.
It's good to talk with you, Governor. Let's get started here because we have not talked since the riots that took place. Riots, protests, however people want to refer to it. The breach at the Capitol back in January. What did you make of that?
Well, it was heartbreaking. You know, I've worked in that building for 12 years when I was in the Congress. It is the heart and soul of our democracy. And it was just tragic to see that happen. And the loss of life was also very tragic, obviously. It's something that, Scott, I hope never happens again. But it was just a sad moment for our democracy. And it was surprising to me that the Capitol could have been invaded as it was. And the destruction that occurred, and it was just a sad time for our country, I think.
Governor, what do you believe happened that day? We knew that was going to be the day they were going to count confirm the electoral votes in the presidential election. We knew there was going to be what we thought a peaceful protest of people who did not agree with the outcome of the election. What happened between point A and point B that caused the breach at the Capitol, in your opinion, as you were watching it?
Well, Scott, you know, before I became a politician, I was a psychologist. And in psychology, we sometimes talk about the contagion effect. And that can occur when a group of people get together and they feed off of each other in a way that causes a continuous escalation. And I think when the president called people to come to Washington, as he did, when he said it would be a wild time, when he told them, go to the Capitol and I'm going to be there with you, which he was not, by the way. He and his family got in their limousines and went back to the White House. I think it just was so energizing and emotional for a lot of people who really didn't intend to do what they did. Now, I believe that there were a number of people in that crowd that carefully and purposefully planned to do exactly what happened. And I believe if they could have gotten access to members of the House or Senate, they very well may have taken their lives. But I also believe that there were other people who were just caught up in that and found themselves in the middle of a situation which they didn't anticipate or expect.
This led to an historic moment. No president has ever been impeached twice during their one or two terms in office. President Trump was impeached before he left office on January the 20th. That trial in the Senate is set to begin here in a couple weeks, very soon. What did you make of a second impeachment of President Trump based on this event that took place at the Capitol?
Well, I think he should have been removed from office as a result of, it, of his first impeachment. That did not happen. But following the November election, the president engaged in a purposeful attempt to overturn the will of the American people. And he continuously told his followers that he had been cheated and that he actually had won the election, that there was so much fraud. But we know that was not true because various states, many of them controlled by Republicans, certified the results, said there was no significant election fraud. Even the Attorney General, Bill Barr, who had been so supportive of Donald Trump, had to admit that as a result of his investigation, there was no significant voter fraud, and yet the president continued to say that. And it's almost unbelievable that a president of the United States would have such little regard for the well-being of our country that he would spread a lie and encourage his followers to believe that lie. And so I think he deserves to be convicted in the Senate. I hope he is, and I hope they take a second vote, which would permit him from ever holding public office again. I don't know that that will happen, but I'm glad they're having the trial because I think the American people need to hear during that trial what happened during that insurrection and the president's direct involvement in it.
If the president were convicted, there could be jail time that would go with what they have charged him with in this impeachment. Do you think that that would ever happen? Do you think that the country could stand for seeing a former president taken to jail, taken to prison?
Well, Scott, I may be wrong, but I don't think that if the Senate were to convict him and uphold the impeachment of the House, that that would result in a jail term. I think for that to happen, there would have to be other charges brought, and he would have to be convicted in a court of law. I think that could be very upsetting for the country. Now that he's no longer in office, I do think it would be proper for any crimes that he may have committed prior to being elected president, and I'm talking about his financial dealings in the state of New York. If he were to be convicted of that kind of crime, then I think he should suffer the consequences like any other citizen in this country. No person, no man, no woman is above the law in the United States of America. And if we were to concede the fact that a president could not be convicted of a crime once they leave office and suffer the consequences, then it would make our country no longer a country in which no one was above the law.
Last question here in regard to the Capitol riots. A lot of what goes on in this Senate trial will have to do with the rally that took place in which former mayor of New York, Rudy Giuliani, spoke, President Trump's son spoke, and the president spoke. Do you believe at that rally, President Trump, because he was the one who was impeached, do you believe, listening to what he said at the rally, that he thought that the protesters were going to do what they were going to do, that they were going to go and break windows and go into the U.S. Capitol? Do you think that's what he thought or wanted them to do?
It's hard to read another person's inner thoughts or to read their mind, but I think if you just listen to the words, "We're going to fight like hell," he said. "We've got to be strong. We can't be weak." Giuliani's saying it's going to be a battle. So I think what they did and said was totally irresponsible. And I would like your listeners to think of it in these ways, Scott. If it had not been the president saying those words, let's say it was an African-American activist saying those words, and as a result, there was an invasion of the Capitol. How would people feel about that? Would they be so willing to say, well, they didn't really intend for that to happen? They may have used those words. They may have encouraged those people to march to the Capitol. But the only way they could have interrupted those proceedings, as the president was encouraging them to do, was to do what they did, to break into the Capitol. Because the House members and the Senate members were in the Capitol doing what they were constitutionally obligated to do, and that was to count the electoral votes and certify the president as being Joe Biden. So I don't know. It's really tough, Scott, to get inside a person's heart and to understand what their inner thoughts are. But at the best thing you can say about it is that the president was totally irresponsible, and that Giuliani was irresponsible, that they were encouraging a mass of people, many of them made up of the Proud Boys and other white nationalists and you know, just really, really bad people, and encouraging them to march on the Capitol. Somebody needs to be held accountable. And in my judgment, the president, the buck stops with the president, because he's the one who encouraged people to come to Washington, D.C. on that day. And he said to them, "It's going to be wild." Well, it was wild. When you break into the Capitol, when you kill police officers, when you maim and damage and injure the Capitol Police as they did, that's a wild occurrence. And so somebody needs to be held accountable. Those who broke in need to be held accountable. But I think those who encouraged it need to be held accountable as well.
Governor, a lot going on here in Ohio politics and just Ohio in general, so I want to turn to Ohio. First, with just kind of a side note, before President Trump left office, our congressman, where we sit right now, Jim Jordan, was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom. What did you make of that?
I think it was shameful. The Presidential Medal of Freedom is the highest civilian honor that this country can bestow upon an individual. And Donald Trump has cheapened it because he's bestowed it upon his political supporters. Rush Limbaugh. A lot of people follow Rush Limbaugh. He's had an amazing career. But to give Rush Limbaugh the Medal of Freedom, and then to give Jim Jordan, of all people, the Medal of Freedom is just, it cheapens the meaning of the Medal of Freedom. And I think it's really shameful. Jim Jordan is, you know, a bombastic, kind of extreme kind of guy. Jim Jordan is supporting this Marjorie Taylor Greene, for example, this QAnon congresswoman who believes that the plane did not hit the Pentagon on 9/11, who believes that the school shootings were staged and did not really happen, who believes that Jewish space technology is being used to start wildfires in California. And Jim Jordan is all in for her. He's standing up for her, supporting her. And for him to have received the Medal of Honor is a disgrace.
Want to turn here to a seat that you know very well, a Senate seat here in Ohio held by Senator Portman. You ran against him in 2016 for that seat. He has announced he will not seek re-election after his current term. What did you make of that?
Well, I think Senator Portman has lost a lot of support in Ohio over the last 4 years. If you just follow letters to the editor, for example, the newspapers have been filled with very critical letters to the editor about Congressman Senator Portman because of his continuous support for the policies and the behavior of Donald Trump. And I think he may have been afraid to face the voters this time. And I don't know if that's true or not, but I'm glad he's retiring. I'm glad he's no longer going to be in the Senate, because as David Pepper wrote in the Cleveland Plain Dealer yesterday, Rob Portman did not show courage as a senator during this past 4 years, and he was always either being quiet or justifying the behaviors of Donald Trump. So it's going to be good that Ohio can get a new senator, in my judgment. And I don't know who it's going to be. My choice is Congressman Tim Ryan, who is from Niles, Ohio, from the Mahoning Valley area, and a good friend of mine and a wonderful congressman, and I think will be a great senator. And I don't know who the Republicans will run. Thankfully, Jim Jordan says he's not going to run. And I would really hate to see Jim Jordan in the Senate. He's done enough damage in the House. I would hate to see him have the power and influence of a senator. But I'm sure the Republicans will put up someone. My guess is they'll put up someone who is, pretty far to the right. And it'll be a great contest if it's Tim Ryan and the Republican. Ohioans will have a chance to choose between, a Democrat who is for working people and a Republican who will tend to support the already wealthy.
You know, Governor, the reason a lot of Republicans were looking at this seat when Senator Portman announced he was not going to seek re-election, and the reason a lot of Democrats have been a little tentative to announce their run for this seat, including Mayor of Dayton, Nan Whaley, who has announced she was on this program a couple weeks ago and says she is not going to run for mayor of Dayton again, and she certainly does have future political aspirations, is because this is thought of as the Republican Senate seat, that Sherrod Brown has the Democrat, and this is the Republican. Do you subscribe that it's going to be hard for a Democrat to win this seat?
Well, it's always difficult to win a Senate seat, but I would remind you, Scott, that for a lot of years, Ohio had Senator John Glenn, a Democrat, and Senator Howard Metzenbaum, a Democrat, and so it has not always been that there was a Republican and a Democrat from Ohio. We have had two Democrats, and they served us very well. I mean, when you think of someone like Senator John Glenn, with his character, with his respect for public service, and you compare him to some of the people who are in the Senate today who are flamethrowers, who simply want to fight rather than getting anything done, I think Ohio did pretty well with two Democratic senators for a long time, and it is my hope that we'll have two Democratic senators going forward.
want to turn to our current governor, Mike DeWine. He will be up for re-election next year. I think one Democrat has announced they're going to run so far on the Democratic side for governor. What do you think, because of this pandemic, which none of us could have predicted, Governor DeWine's chances are of being reelected? Not that a lot can't happen between now and then, but if the election were held tomorrow, how do you think people would view how Governor DeWine handled this? Because certainly it's going to be his defining moment at this point.
Well, I think if the election were held tomorrow, it is very likely that Governor DeWine would win a second term. I think Governor DeWine has had a really difficult time in dealing with this pandemic. I think he's done a pretty good job, as a matter of fact, dealing with the pandemic. I think it's rather shameful that he's had to fight members of his own party, some of whom would want to impeach him, for just trying to save the lives of Ohioans. I speak with the governor occasionally. My wife says I have a sympathy for him because I understand what it's like to be in that office during difficult economic times, because I dealt with the Great Recession when I was governor, and he's now dealing with the results of this pandemic and its effect on the economy. But I do understand the difficulty of trying to govern this great state of ours. It's a big state. It's a very diverse state. You know, we've got a little bit of everything in Ohio. We've got big cities and small towns and rural areas and Appalachia and farm country and lots of languages spoken in Ohio, and a lot of ethnic groups live in Ohio. And so being the governor of Ohio was a tough job, even in the best of times. But during a pandemic and during an economic downturn, I think it is exceptionally difficult. And so I have some sympathy for what Governor DeWine has to deal with on a day-by-day basis.
The states were left to handle how this vaccination process was going to be handled. How do you think his administration and he in general have handled the vaccination process?
Well, it seems to have worked fairly well, although I was troubled a couple of days ago when I read in the newspaper that only about 5% of those who have received the vaccine are African Americans. And that was disturbing to me because so many African Americans are suffering disproportionately with sickness and death due to this virus. And one of the reasons is so many of the people who work in our service industry are members of the African American community. And so, I'm glad the governor has taken note of that and has indicated that he's going to try to make sure that that imbalance is corrected. And I got my shot. You know, I'm 79 years old, and so I waited until it was my turn in terms of the criteria, and I got my first shot of the Moderna vaccine, and no side effects at all, not even a sore arm. It was as though nothing had happened. And so I would encourage people, especially members of the community who may be a little suspicious of the vaccine, to take it whenever they have an opportunity. It can save their lives, and it will help us get back to normal when enough people have taken the vaccine to establish what's called herd immunity in this country, and we can start living our lives in a more normal way again.
You know, Governor, it's been very interesting. It was offered to first responders. It was offered to the medical field. Now we're getting into the age categories, and soon we will be getting into, well, we were already getting into people in the education field. It seems as if, and I'm not saying this is a blanket statement, but here's this vaccine, and some people have just turned it down. It seems to be younger people who are turning it down, younger first responders, younger people in the education field, but they are turning it down. They're worried about side effects. They're worried about the fact that it hasn't been approved by the FDA. There's a lot of worry. Did you think that would happen after living with this pandemic for 9 months?
Scott, I've been a little surprised at the hesitancy that so many people have to accept the vaccine. I think that's unfortunate. You know, there's always an amount, a level of suspicion, I think, when something like a pandemic occurs and science comes up with a cure. You know, my younger sister had polio when she was a child, and I remember how thankful we all were when when the vaccine came along and polio was, for most purposes, eliminated. Although even polio and measles and some of these dreaded diseases are coming back now because of the hesitancy of some people have to take a vaccine, and the so-called no-vaxxers are. You know, I think really doing a great disservice, because some of these diseases that we no longer have to worry about were dreaded diseases. I mean, probably most of your listeners don't even remember seeing pictures of these large iron lungs that some polio victims had to be placed in just in order to help them stay alive and breathe, but it was a tragic time, and we were able to overcome that through science. Science helped us rid ourselves of the fear of polio. Science can help us rid ourselves of the fear of this COVID-19 deadly disease. And so I would just encourage all of your listeners, please, when you get the opportunity, please take the vaccine. As I said, I'm 79 years old. I took it. My arm didn't even get sore. No side effects whatsoever. And it's safe, and it can save lives.
Governor, you spoke about race inequalities earlier as it related to the COVID-19 vaccine, but there's an issue going on in Columbus right now. There was a new development just yesterday with it, and I'm going to try to explain this in a tin-type fashion. There was a shooting on, I believe it was in late December. Andre Hill was killed, an African-American gentleman. Adam Coy was the officer. Yesterday, Adam Coy, who is no longer an officer in Columbus, was indicted by the Attorney General on a murder charge. The police chief in Columbus, Thomas Quinlan, depending on which news source you read and who you talk to, was either asked to step down by Mayor Ginther or resigned on his own. What do you make of that whole situation, and do you think that is a race situation?
I think, Scott, that too many unarmed black individuals in this country are killed, that's really unfortunate. And I think there is a special problem in Franklin County. If you look at the number of police-involved shooting deaths in Franklin County over the last 6 years, and you compare that to shooting deaths in Cleveland, Ohio, Cuyahoga County, and in Cincinnati, Hamilton County, it's a much larger number in Franklin County than in either of these other two large counties, even when the difference in population is accounted for. And that is really troubling to me. And I don't know why that difference exists, but I do know that in Cuyahoga County, some years ago, they entered into a federal consent decree where a federal judge oversaw reforms in Cuyahoga County, And I know in Hamilton County several years ago, after some rioting, the community and the police entered into an agreement where they made significant changes in their policing methods. And but what I know is, if you look at the number of people who have been killed in the last 6 years in Franklin County compared to those other two large Ohio counties, Franklin County has experienced many more deaths. And in fact, I think I can give you the numbers here. Over the last six-year period of time, there have been 34 police-involved deaths in Franklin County. There have been 17 in Cuyahoga County and 10 in Hamilton County. And I think we need to look at why that may have happened and make changes. We just simply cannot go on with African American men losing their lives at the hands of police officers when those situations do not merit the use of lethal, deadly force.
Do you go along with the idea that Police Chief Quinlan should have resigned and that Adam Coy should have been charged with murder?
Well, those are difficult questions to answer because I don't have all of the information that I would like to have in order to make such a judgment. But in terms of the police chief, I think any time someone in that kind of position loses the confidence of the citizenry, then it's just appropriate for them to leave that post and to give someone else an opportunity. In terms of charging Mr. Coy as he was charged, it would appear that a life was lost unnecessarily. A man was standing in the garage of a home where he was an invited guest. He had done nothing wrong, and yet he lost his life at the hands of a police officer who, at best, did not exercise appropriate judgment. But I will let the legal system make a determination as to his guilt or innocence.
In our final 10 minutes here, I want to turn to the governor's race that will be taking place in 2022. As I say, some people have announced. I believe the mayor of Cleveland has announced his intention to run on the Democratic side. In this race, there are two people's names who come up a lot, but they're also coming up for the Senate seat in Senator Portman's Senate seat. I want to bring up these two names and get your opinion. And one of them is Nan Whaley. She currently is the mayor of Dayton. Got a lot of national attention when the shootings happened in Dayton a couple of years ago and her contretemps she had with President Trump at that time. She also is angry with Governor DeWine now over the Stand Your Ground law being signed into effect right around the beginning of this year by Governor DeWine. Nan Whaley also wrote an article in the New York Times, I believe about a week ago, telling people what Democrats need to do to win in Ohio, that it has to change from what is going on now. She says she is not opposed to the idea of running for senator and also not opposed to the idea of running for governor, and she will not run for mayor again, as I said earlier, of Dayton. She's already said that. What do you make of Nan Whaley?
Well, I think she's been a really good mayor. She's a friend of mine, and I've talked with her many times about her interest in the governor's office. And so I think she would be a very strong candidate.
Do you think she should run for senator?
Well, I've chosen Tim Ryan as my choice for the Senate. So she certainly has the right to choose to do that if she, you know, if she thinks that's the right course of action for her. But I'm strongly supporting Congressman Tim Ryan for the Senate.
When it comes to Nan Whaley running for governor, one of the big questions, and it's hard to believe we're still talking about this in 2021, is the fact that we have never had an elected female governor of the state of Ohio. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's because women have been discriminated against throughout the history of our country. In ways that are subtle and sometimes not so subtle. So I think in years past, it was a disadvantage to be a woman seeking a high public office. My personal feeling is that that one of the reasons Hillary Clinton was not elected president, although she received millions of more votes than Donald Trump did, was because she was a female. And but thankfully that is changing, Scott. In fact, some people believe that it may be advantageous to be a female now, because people have become conscious of the fact that women have not been given the same opportunities as men across the years. And I think there's a strong desire on the part of our people to correct that and to make sure that gender discrimination becomes no longer a part of our political system.
There's another name I want to get to here in just a second, but before we do, also when it comes to governor, and I think I'm right about this, I don't think we've ever had an elected African-American governor at this point either, and really not many strong candidates for that particular position as far as votes have gone. Not just somebody out of the blue, but would you like to see somebody in the Democratic primary or Republican primary who is qualified run for governor of Ohio?
Are you talking about an African-American?
An African-American, yeah.
Sure, absolutely. There are, you know, there are African-American men and women in Ohio that I think would be hugely qualified to do that if they chose to run.
Do you think they have faced, the African-American community has faced the same problem that women have faced when running for high office?
Oh, no doubt. Absolutely. There, you know, unfortunately, there remains a level of systematic racism in our country that it sometimes isn't even recognized. It's just the result of years and years and years of discriminatory practices. And Scott, when you think that, you know, for hundreds of years this country practiced and tolerated slavery, and the vestiges of our history continue to be an influence on our policies today. Thankfully, I think we're becoming more sensitive to that, and things are changing, and I think we're a better country as a result of that.
Another name in our final 4 minutes here, Governor, that I want to talk about, and this is interesting. We have this governor's race coming up. We have this Senate race coming up in the next couple years here. And a name that's floating around there is the man who won the Democratic nomination for governor and came very close to becoming governor in our last election for governor, Rich Cordray, who is not, by any stretch of the imagination, an older gentleman. We haven't heard a whole lot from him since that election. He did write a book. What do you think about Rich Cordray getting in either one of these races? Do you think we'll see him again run for public office?
You know, I don't know, but the respect I have for Rich Cordray is so great that regardless of what he may choose to do, I would be supportive of him. He's one of the most intellectually gifted people that I have ever worked with. He's a decent human being, and you're right, he did write a book about his experience in leading the Consumer Protection Agency in Washington. I know that Rich is doing some consulting with other states who may be wanting to develop their own consumer protection efforts within their states. But Rich can do just about anything because he is so competent and capable. And I mean, he could teach, he could continue to write. His potential is unlimited in my judgment.
Would you like to see him get involved in one of these races? I know you support Tim Ryan again in the Senate race, but you know.
Yeah. If Rich were to decide to seek the governor's office again, I think that'd be great. But I want Rich to do what he feels is in his best interest and so on. And thus far, he has expressed no inclination to do that. But as I say, you know, I'm a big Rich Cordray fan. And he's just a good, decent human being, as well as being incredibly bright and gifted intellectually.
Two quick questions, Governor, here in our final 90 seconds. If you had to bet, would you say Rich Cordray would see him, not necessarily this time, but do you think he'll ever run for public office again?
I think it's possible. I haven't talked with him about that recently, but my wife Frances gets together with Peggy Cordray occasionally, and I think the Cordrays are in a good place in their lives, so we'll just have to wait to see what the future holds for them.
Final question with 30 seconds left to go. Looking back on the four-year presidency of Donald Trump, if you had to describe it in one word, what would be the word?
Oh, my. One word. Tragic. I think it was tragic for our country in that well over 450,000 Americans are dead, and I'm convinced that if the president had dealt with the pandemic early on, that hundreds of thousands of lives could have been saved if he had encouraged people to wear masks, if he had just done the basic things that a decent president would have done. Many people who are now deceased would still be alive in this country. The president turned the American people against each other and encouraged that. He was crude. He was disdainful of our democracy. He had no understanding of what a president should do. So I think it was just a tragic result. Hopefully, our country will never have to go through that kind of presidency again.
The 68th governor of the great state of Ohio, Ted Strickland, always a friend to me in this program. Governor Strickland, come back anytime. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
And Scott, I hope you and all of your listeners have a good day. Thank you so much.
Stay well.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Governor Ted Strickland, we've got about 4 minutes left in this segment, and we thank him for coming on. It's always interesting to talk to the governor. It's always interesting to talk to any former governor, Republican or Democrat, in Ohio. I've had the chance to talk to former Governor Gilligan, who has now passed on. Of course, Governor Strickland, Governor Celeste, I had a chance to speak to, and I have spoken with Governor DeWine, and... You know, speaking to the top executive in the state, and getting their feelings on things is fascinating, because we all live in this state and their policies affect what is going on in this state. What's going to happen in the next governor's race? We don't know. What's going to happen in the next Senate race? We don't know. I know we've got Ed Asner coming up next hour here on the program. So we are going to stick together here on WWGH Radio. Let's go to the phone lines. Go ahead, caller.
Yes, Scott Spears, please.
Yes, you're on the air with Scott.
Yes, Scott, this is Al Weichel. You had sent a message about some albums.
Yes.
Talking to the right person?
You're talking to the right person. Do you listen to the station here, or are you listening?
No, sir, I didn't know anything about it. A gentleman dropped the message off yesterday to me.
Well, I hope you're listening. We're about to go to break here, but yeah, I wanted to have you on the program to talk about your record collection. Somebody called in yesterday and was talking about it, and I wanted to ask you about a few albums that I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And they said you had been a DJ at some point. Is that true?
Yes, that's correct, back in Pennsylvania.
Really? Now, did you do records, or did you do any type of talk radio?
No, we did mostly vinyl, actually. We played a lot of vinyl. It was a doo-wop station, as a matter of fact.
Is that right? Well, let me ask you, because we've got 2 minutes before I go to break here. The album that I've been trying to find is a Christmas album that was done many years ago by Merv Griffin and Arthur Treacher. And they're on the cover. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do know about it, but I don't have it.
Don't have it. Do you know why this is such a rare album?
I really have no idea, truthfully.
Now, what kind of I like the comedy albums. What type of albums are in your record collection?
Right at this time, mostly doo-wop and 50s and 60s music.
Oh, very nice. Well, Al, I tell you what, we're going to go to break here. Do you have the dial so you can listen to the station here?
No, I don't. Is it on computer at any place or
yeah,
time?
It is. It's on the computer 24 hours a day. The web address is www.gh1071.com. If you go there, you can stream us live.
I'm writing that down. I hope I've got it right.
Yeah.
www.gh1071.com.
Let me give it WWGH.
Oh, GH. Okay, I looked like a four.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
No problem. 1071.com.
Yes, I've got it down now. Yeah, I'll bring it up on the computer and start listening to it there, Scott.
Do that, and I'm on from 8 to 10. I'll have more time tomorrow morning to talk between 8 and 10. If you can, call in tomorrow morning, and we can have a deeper conversation about this.
That'd be great. Thank you, sir, for your time. You have a great day.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See, it's not Al Winkel, it's Al Weichel. Ed Asner coming up in 15 minutes.
Talk about that. The day the verdict came back, Dr. Shepard had been in prison over a decade at that point.
No, he was out on bail by then.
Oh, he was out on bail by then.
You're right. He was in prison 10 years.